Welcome to episode 364 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Oh, right. It seems like Build was a heck of a lot longer ago than a week.
Yeah, and it really wasn't even a full week for you because you were there for nearly all of last week.
Yeah, I was there Tuesday through Friday, took the red eye home Friday night.
Oh, that's brutal.
It was brutal, but somewhat necessary. So. And worthwhile. So it's all right. I got a little bit of sleep on the flight, but probably not enough. It was one flight. It was like the one flight in my life that landed exceptionally early that I didn't kind of wish it wouldn't have, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Might have been able to sleep a little more. Oh, well. Build was cool. We'll be talking a little bit more about Build tonight near the end of the show, but not too much more was announced after we had recorded last week. So what we didn't have last week was any listener feedback, and that is not the case this week. We received an email at our inbox, which you can find at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com from Eamon, and he says, "Hey guys, I love the podcast, and I've been listening from the first episode. Holy cow. You are my number two must listen show behind something called Home On."
Woo-hoo!
Not sure. He says, "My question is about syncing photos from my Windows Phone 8.1 to my computer. To avoid filling up my phone's storage, I want to delete photos off the phone after they've been synced. Pretty standard Windows functionality so far, but I do not want to delete photos that I've marked as favorite on the phone. Any ideas?" I don't have any ideas. Do you have any ideas, Richard?
I don't. It has been so long since I've had to worry about library syncing. And remember, when I was syncing content to my Windows Phone, it was through a Mac. And I would venture to guess that that program that Microsoft built for the Mac operates a little bit differently.
Yeah, probably. In fact, on the Windows side, you know, if there's an app way of doing this, I don't even know it, actually. But when you, because I did this tonight, because I haven't messed with a Windows Phone 8.1 device in a while, and I never copy photos off of them. But when you plug a Windows Phone 8.1 device into a Windows PC, it shows up in File Explorer, and you get the typical option like you would if you plugged in a camera. If you right-click on that device, you can say Import Pictures and Videos. And it brings up your pretty standard photo and video importer utility, which is good in terms of ease of use, but maybe kind of bad in that it's your standard photos and videos importer, and it has no concept of those photos being marked as favorites on your phone. So I don't know if there's some app out there. I don't know if there's any way for an app or any piece of software on your computer to know whether your photos are favorites or not. So I'm not sure if there is an easy solution to this. But if any of our listeners have any ideas, then we would love it if you guys would send them in to us, and we will pass that information along to Eamon.
So I have some hypothetical ideas, and I don't know if this would solve his problem or not. But I'd be curious if you couldn't do something like if this, then that to somehow be monitoring the photographs that are taken and that are showing up in, presumably they're being synced with OneDrive. And I don't even know if there's a OneDrive channel or if this, then that. But if there is, if you could monitor what is in favorites and somehow back that up to a different storage mechanism, like a completely different one, like maybe Dropbox or something, and then always have your Dropbox favorites folder on and downloaded to that device. And I'm just thinking about how I might try to do this if I were to do it on my iPhone.
Hmm. You know, I suppose there could be an app for the phone also. You know, he could leave the photos on the phone after importing them to his PC, And then if an app exists on the phone that can tell what photos are favorites and what ones aren't, he could then just delete them using that app directly on the phone. That might be a more likely scenario. I think you're more likely to find a Windows Phone app that knows which photos in your camera roll are favorites than you will be to find an app on the PC that knows which ones are favorites.
Yeah, possibly. Hmm. Interesting problem. I'd be really curious to find out how to resolve that. And I would also suggest, Eamon, that if you haven't already, maybe post this out on one of the Windows Phone user forums out there where there are communities of folks using Windows Phone, because I can't imagine you're the only person that has had this want or need.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you, Eamon, for that email. And hopefully we'll have some more feedback from other listeners for next week. Again, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com is where you can send those. And you could even attach a recording of any question or feedback that you have for us to an email also. And we'll just play that on the show.
In 2016, we call that voicemail.
Well, sure. it's not something that people typically do, but you could.
That's true.
And it wouldn't be all that difficult with your phone, probably. So go ahead and do that. We enjoy getting voicemails. All right. So let's move on to our topics tonight. Here's another odd situation. We've got two stories in our video section tonight, and they both came to us from Windows Media Center Google Plus community. That's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
So this first one, you know, we hear a lot about people who get really sick of having their Windows Media Center PCs nag them that they should be installing Windows 10. And Richard, I don't know if you've done much on your Windows Media Center PC to make it not do that. I know I haven't. I just kind of ignore it, and it hasn't been an issue for me yet. But for some people, it has been, and it's really annoying.
Well, and I think the bigger concern is that what happens if someone else in your family gets the prompt and they choose the wrong obvious button, right?
Right.
And end up inadvertently upgrading.
Yeah, and then perhaps you have issues rolling back to Windows 7 or 8.1 when you're done.
Right.
Yeah, that would be really bad. That's a good point. So someone posted to the Windows Media Center Google Plus community, this was Stephen Morris actually, that there's an app out there called, I'm not sure that you can even call this an app, but it's called Never 10, meaning I never want to go to Windows 10 on this box. And it's basically just a little utility that you download, you run it on your PC, it doesn't really install anything, all it does is go in and make the system configuration changes that need to be made to make these nag windows go away, which is most likely some registry setting changes. What do you think, Richard?
It's interesting. I'm generally not terribly fond of stuff like this that's just seems like random utility that you would download and run to make registry setting changes. However, did you notice where this is?
Gibson Research Corporation?
Yeah. So I totally trust it now. Steve Gibson.
About them? Oh, it's Steve Gibson.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is even like this is even more reliable because if you've followed him at all, you know how vehemently opposed he is to Windows 10 across the board.
Right. I think he's still planning to stick with Windows XP for a long time.
Yeah. So he says.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, that makes me a lot less nervous about this app then.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you noticed that because I had no idea. Very cool.
All right. Well, also in our video segment tonight is an update about MB. And, you know, most people are familiar with MB, previously known as Media Browser, and they've recently had some server updates, but more interestingly, I think, is they just added an update for adding the MB app to Apple TV. So if you have an Apple TV Gen 4, the new Apple TV, you can now add the MB app and use it to play movies, play your TV, play music, watch photos. Now, what it doesn't yet do is it doesn't yet support live TV. And I don't see anything on here that indicates whether that is coming or not, but they do have the ability to go through your recorded TV and your TV library. So pretty cool. That's one more place if you're a media browser user that you can go and watch content.
Yeah, always nice to see apps like this expanding their reach out onto to new platforms. So, and we've been fans of MB for a really long time. All right, so let's move on to some gaming news this week. You know, there's actually not a lot this week. I'd kind of hoped that maybe there would be, other than the launch, of course, of Quantum Break this week on the Xbox One. Kind of, that's kind of a big deal, I suppose. But we don't normally talk about game launches here, so we'll skip on past that and instead talk about some free games that you can get. It's a new month. April started just this last week, so we've got new free games available to Xbox One and Xbox 360 users. If you're on the Xbox One, you can now get The Wolf Among Us. You may not have heard of this title, but you probably should have, because this is another game from Telltale, the makers of the Walking Dead games and the Game of Thrones games, and I think a couple of other ones. This one's supposed to be pretty good. I have not gotten a chance to check it out yet, but I definitely already claimed my copy of this. This one will be available April 1st through the 30th. And then on April 16th, you'll be able to get a hold of Sunset Overdrive for free on the Xbox One. This game came out in fall of 2014. This was one of the big exclusives from 2014. This is a third-person action game that doesn't take itself too seriously. It's pretty fast-paced. It looks like a lot of fun. Got pretty great reviews at the time, and I'm really looking forward to playing this one too. So really, two great games on the Xbox One for the month of April. And then on the 360, for the first half of the month, we've got Dead Space. This is a survival horror game in space, which sounds totally, totally creepy. This game, there was actually a series of Dead Space games. These have reviewed well. I've never played one, but I think I'm going to try and play this one if I can. Like, I've never really played scary games, and this one's supposed to be pretty stinking scary. So, I want to at least try this out.
Cool.
And then for the second half of the month is Saints Row 4. If you don't know what Saints Row is, it's basically take Grand Theft Auto and take it to the extreme, like ludicrous extreme, and that's Saints Row. So not really my kind of game, but definitely a popular series. And again, both of those Xbox 360 games, backwards compatible. So if you've got an Xbox One, you can grab them also. And then because Microsoft has to do this on such a crazy, weird schedule, you can still grab Lords of the Fallen on the Xbox One until April 15th. So you've got until tax day to get yourself the Dark Souls sort of... people like to call it a Dark Souls ripoff. It's similar to Dark Souls. I wouldn't call it a ripoff. It gets pretty good reviews. On the Xbox One. So make sure you grab a hold of that also.
I'm going to be too busy doing my taxes.
You have to get Dead Space, though. You should actually try Dead Space. Do you like scary movies?
Not particularly.
But this might...
Well,
it
you
might
know
be
I'm going to download it.
Well, right, exactly. So you should try it and see if it scares the crap out of you.
That just sounds awesome.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds awesome to me that you would get the crap scared out of you.
Hey,
as long as it's you and not me. Okay, so it's also a new week, which also means new deals with gold. And frankly, this might be the worst week for deals with gold that they've ever had. Games that I would recommend, maybe Jackbox Party Pack 2. Sometimes those games can be a lot of fun. I don't actually have any experience with that game, but some of those party games can be fun. And it's half off, so it's only $12.50. And this seems to be really, really common. I think this is at least the third time that a Battlefront game has been on sale during a Deals with Gold. This time it's only Battlefront Ultimate Edition, which is Star Wars Battlefront plus all of the DLC. That DLC pack is normally a $50 add-on. So Battlefront Ultimate is normally $120. Right now, it's $90. That still seems like a lot of money for a game that's on sale to me.
But yeah.
I guess, the other thing is, if you haven't bought it yet, how interested in getting all of the DLC are you? I'm not really sure. So, I don't know. If you're interested in dropping $90 for Battlefront, here's your opportunity, I suppose. And then there's one other thing that I wanted to talk about on the Xbox front before we leave our gaming section. And that is a new website that's been launched. It's called Xbox Unlocked. That phrase should sound familiar to you, because just a couple weeks ago, we had our good friend Marcus Lyons on the show, and he mentioned his other Twitter alias called Xbox Unlocked. And he has now started a website around that, I was going to say personality, brand. I'm not really sure what to call it, but
brand.
Brand. But this is probably not what you're expecting of a gaming site. If you're looking for, you know, reviews of the latest games and all of the endless game industry coverage that you might find on some of the bigger sites, that's not what you're going to see over at Xbox Unlocked. Nope. Instead, he is making this site a place where you can learn about all of the things that you can do with an Xbox. And he's planning to talk about how you can better make use of your Xbox in your house with your family. He'll have articles about, you know, setting up an Xbox so that it's safe and friendly for kids to use in your house. Or he's got an article up today about what you can do with that weird HDMI input. Why is there an HDMI input on the Xbox One? Most of our listeners know that, but not everybody does. So he's got an article about that. And those are the types of things that you're going to see on Xbox Unlocked. Now, you might expect Xbox Unlocked to be at xboxunlocked.com. It's not. It's at an older domain name that he's owned for a while. xboxbeat.com is where you'll find that site. And we'll, of course, have a link to that in the show notes. But definitely want to go give that site a look at, because there's going to be a lot of good information there, I think. Marcus is really passionate about this stuff. I've never seen someone more passionate about all of the different things you can do on Xbox other than just play games than Marcus. And that's not to say that there won't be any talk about gaming at the site. I mean, it is still an Xbox site, so he's going to talk about the games that he's really excited about. Just don't expect, you know, every single new game that gets announced or is on sale or reviews and things like that. There's better sites for that that aren't sure covering the things that he's planning to cover. So definitely check out Xbox Unlocked at xboxbeat.com.
Cool. Very cool.
So this week we also got a new insider preview build for Windows 10. And we had kind of stopped talking about these as they've gotten more frequent and less interesting over the last few months. But this one's actually pretty impressive. And if you haven't been paying attention to the Windows Insider preview builds, this is one to pay attention to. Last week at Build, Microsoft announced a lot of things that would be coming to Windows 10 in the anniversary update. And, you know, so, you know, the anniversary update comes this summer. So I figured a lot of the stuff we probably wouldn't see until later releases of Windows 10. Well, we only had to wait a week because a bunch of these features that were announced just a few days ago are already in this release, including Edge extensions, so extensions for the Edge browser, that's there. If you're a developer, especially a web developer, you might be interested to know that the Bash shell that's built upon Ubuntu is available in this build. There's some additions to Cortana that they're calling cross-device functionality, where, say, your phone's battery is low, you'll get a notification on your PC that your phone is dying and you might want to charge it. They're enabling Find My Phone functionality right into Windows 10 so that you can find it. And here's a really useful one. Say you're sitting at your computer and you're looking up directions to a place that maybe you're going to go eat dinner there or something like that. You find it on the map, you've got directions. Well, that doesn't help you all that much because you're not going to take your computer with you in the car, but you are going to take your phone. Now they've made it much easier using Cortana to share those map directions right to your phone if you're looking up how to get someplace. That's really cool. The new Skype Universal Windows app that they've been talking about over the last week, it's now available in this new preview. If you really like dark themes, that's available in this new build. And here's kind of a cool one. A new app called Connect, Connect, you know, the normal way of spelling Connect, not like the hardware device. This app will allow your computer, assuming that it has Wi-Fi built into it, will allow your computer to be a Miracast target. So basically, take your Windows phone and use another PC as your continuum target, basically, which is kind of cool. I mean, you're probably not going to use that in the more traditional way that we think of using continuum, where I'm just going to walk up with my phone, plug it into a continuum dock, and be able to use my phone as a computer replacement because I don't have a computer. You obviously have a computer in this scenario.
Right.
But if you're just trying to display some photos up on the big screen or something along those lines, then that would make a lot of sense. Or maybe, I don't know. I guess I'm having a hard time thinking of other uses. Maybe you want to play a Windows Phone game on a bigger screen. You could do that. And, you know, as we talked about last week, Xbox One controller support through Continuum. I don't know if that would work with this, but it might, and it'd be worth trying out if you've got a game that supports that and you want to try that out. That would be a pretty useful use case, I suppose. Our listeners can't see the look on your face, but I can, and I can tell that look on your face, Richard, is I can't see a use for this at all.
Yeah, I'm really hard-pressed trying to think of a use case. I like your example of maybe showing pictures or something on a bigger screen, or maybe you just have an app on your phone and you want to be able to display it on a monitor that's nearby that's hooked into a computer that you have. Maybe you could do something like this. Well, I was going to say with a home theater PC, but you're probably not using Windows 10 as a home theater PC, at least not yet.
Yeah, I had the same brief thought.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, probably not using Windows 10 on your home theater PC.
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed on this one, but it'll be interesting to see how they talk about this, because this is intriguing. It's nice that you can do it.
Yep. I also know that we have some developers that listen to the show. I looked through the known issues for this release. If you're a Windows Phone developer, you might not want this release because one of the known issues is that the Windows 10 mobile emulators don't work in this release for some reason. The HoloLens emulators also don't work in this release, but that affects a much smaller group of people, I would imagine. Okay. So that's it for that insider preview.
So are you going to download that?
I did, but I only install the insider previews on my Surface Pro. I don't run them on my primary machine, and I don't run them on my work laptop either.
Okay.
They're typically pretty stable. It's just that, you know, frankly, I don't want to deal with the frequent installs of the OSs and the frequent reboots and all that stuff. I just don't feel like dealing with that. And and in this case, I would be in a world of problems. Well, actually, that's not true because I normally use the Windows Phone 8.1 emulators, not the 10. But yeah, that would be bad. That would be really bad.
So we heard about some of this stuff at last week's Build announcements, and there were other announcements that happened at Build while you were there, but we really only got to talk about those things that first came up on that first day, Wednesday. There's other stuff that is probably worth discussing. I know I wanted to talk about the Xamarin announcement because you and I were both wondering, for reasons aside from the DMZ, whether Xamarin might actually become a part of the Microsoft developer toolset, Visual Studio. And it sounds like the answer is yes, and the cost is nothing.
That's absolutely correct. So on during day two's keynote, they announced that the Xamarin development tools are completely free across all of the versions of Visual Studio, even the free version of Visual Studio that's called Visual Studio Community Edition. Now, why does this matter? Like, why does this matter to this audience and this show? If you're not a developer, why do you care that Xamarin is free? Well, I think there's a decent, I'm going to go with a decent possibility here.
There's a possibility
that this could actually be a good thing for Windows Phone users. To which you're probably thinking, why would a tool that allows people to write apps for Android and iOS be a good thing for Windows Phone users? Here's why. Let's say you're an Android developer and you're probably doing your Android development on a Windows PC because Linux is horrible. And yeah, so you're probably doing it on a Windows PC anyway. And you might already know C# and .NET. And if thought, man, Xamarin sounds cool, but it's too expensive, so I guess I'm just going to do my Android development in Java. But, you know, I'd also really kind of like to be doing apps for iOS too, but I don't have a Mac, or maybe I do, but I don't want to learn yet another language. Man, would it be awesome to use C# for all of this. Well, now you can. And if you're now switching over to using Xamarin so that you can easily write apps that work on iOS and Android, then it's not very much of a leap at all to take that same code base and make a Windows Phone app. You know, I've talked to lots of Xamarin developers over the years, and it's not unreasonable to see 80% code reuse across the platforms, because with Xamarin, it basically means that all of your backend code, all of the code that's really doing stuff, is all written in the same language and can be shared across all the platforms. The only thing that's different between iOS and Android from a Xamarin perspective is the actual UI layer. You know, you still have to use the native UI tools, but that's what gives you such a great user experience from these apps anyway. So if you could take your code that you're using to write iOS and Android apps and then just apply them to a Windows Phone UI, then you get a Windows Phone app with a lot less upfront cost because you just don't have as much to develop. And that could be enough to get more people to start bringing their apps to Windows Phone. I think there's still going to be some number of developers out there who say, any amount of work at all that I have to do to bring my app to Windows Phone is too much. It's just too low of a market share. I'm not doing any extra work at all. Those guys, we're just never going to get them. But some companies might actually view this as an opportunity to start bringing apps to Windows Phone and Windows 10 in general. And that would be really stinking awesome.
Yeah, I know for a fact that there are companies interested in developing for the Windows platforms, but there just hasn't been enough demand for it yet. And if you're already building mobile applications for iOS or Android, and you have resources that are familiar with it's, what would this use? This would be coding in C#.
Correct.
So you could build in C#, and then build your UI layer for each of your target platforms on top of that and deploy to those platforms with nominal incremental effort compared to that core code base, I think that would be appealing to many, many companies. So yes, I think this is probably more likely to see use from enterprises and companies that are providing applications. I'm not entirely convinced that this is going to change much for your basement or garage app developer.
Yeah, unless they were just really interested in Xamarin to begin with, then maybe, but probably not as much. You're right. So we'll see. And honestly, I think that's part of the reason why Microsoft bought Xamarin. I think that's part of the reason why they took this bet, because it could lead to more apps.
Absolutely why they bought Xamarin. Yes. I think this was a very smart move on their part, and serious kudos for, in my opinion, doing the right thing and making this a free tool that comes with Visual Studio. And that's every version of Visual Studio, whether you're purchasing enterprise copies or whether you're using the free community edition.
Correct. Yep. Every version. So there was one other thing that I got more information on while I was at Build later in the week, and that was on the idea of using your Xbox as a developer machine. They eventually released the details and instructions on how you go about enabling your Xbox to switch into dev mode. It's actually really easy, but there are a couple of big warnings that you need to know about. So the first one is, if you're in the Xbox preview program, you have to leave the program to do this, because it's basically another preview program. It's the developer preview program, and you can't be in multiple preview programs at the same time, because you're going to get new builds frequently being in the dev program that would be different from the insider preview program. Now, I don't think that if you switch out of the insider preview to jump into the dev preview that you'll never be able to get back into the insider, because I think you're still an insider, but there's some amount of work there. So either way, once you go to the app store and install this Xbox dev mode app, you go through the scary warnings and all those prompts, and it's going to install a new version of the OS on your machine. That's a 3 gig download. There's no incremental builds here. It's a whole new OS, basically. Then there's another big potential problem here. They don't guarantee that every game and app that's out there works right now. So I went and found the Xbox guys while I was at Build, and the very first question I asked was, do you have a list of known issues? Like, can you tell me
right. What
games and apps don't work if you're in
what am I not going to be able to do anymore?
Right. And he was very honest with me. He said, if you had asked me last week, the answer would have been all of them. Like, nothing worked. but they've been testing some things. They've fixed a lot of the issues. He said from his personal experience, he knows that Rise of the Tomb Raider works. He said that Halo works, because if Halo didn't work, that would be really embarrassing. So Halo definitely works. He said on the app side, they've tested their most popular apps like the TV app and Netflix. Those things still work. But in terms of other games, they don't have a list of what works and what doesn't work. So what do you do if you switch into dev mode and your favorite game doesn't work? Well, you can leave dev mode. You can switch back to a regular build of the Xbox software. What does that mean? Well, it means that you're downloading another 3 gig version of the OS, and best case scenario, you're going to get a system refresh. What's a refresh? Refresh means all of your games and apps are still there, but it's kind of like you just got the machine for the first time, because your user accounts aren't set up, your settings aren't set up, your Kinect probably isn't configured. You're going to have to go through and set those things up again. Worst case scenario, It's going to do a full system restore. And that means everything is wiped out. Everything. So if you're interested in doing this, for one thing, don't do this unless you actually want to develop an app for this. Because you're not going to get any new features. Like, this is not a new feature preview. This is not like it's not like the insider preview where you're getting new features ahead of time. It's just giving you the ability to deploy apps that you're making to your Xbox. So if you don't want to do that, don't do this. If you do want to do that and you're nervous, step one, install all of your games to an external hard drive. Because then if your Xbox gets wiped, at least you don't have to reinstall all the games again because they're on an external hard drive. Other than that, I can't really give you any more advice because you're probably going to be, you know, setting up your user accounts and all of that all over again. That doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me. But if I had to reinstall all of my games, I would be really, really annoyed. So that's your big word of advice. And, you know, here's the thing that really shocked me the most about my conversation with this gentleman from the Xbox team. So when you go to enable developer mode, it gives you a big, scary warning message saying, if you do this and you want to go back, you might lose everything. And
that's probably a good thing that it does that.
It's a really great thing that it does that. But Richard, you and I have been in software development forever. And one thing that we know is that people never read those messages.
Right, right.
They've got telemetry that says that they've seen all kinds of people get to that warning message and then stop.
Good.
Yes. That was really good to hear. So there's all of your warnings for what you really need to know if you're going to switch over to the Xbox dev mode for trying out some app development. So I haven't even done this yet. I'm going to do this eventually, but I haven't done it yet because I don't need it just yet. And I don't want to find out that, you know, maybe the Division doesn't work or something like that. That would be really bad.
Or that, you know, normal TV playback or something like that doesn't work.
Well, he said that the TV app does work.
Okay.
Yeah. So TV, Netflix, I'm guessing Amazon Video. It sounds like those do work, but he really wasn't sure at all about games. And, you know, there's new games coming out all the time, so you never know.
Now, who actually needs this? Let's say, not so hypothetically, that you're developing something for the Xbox and I want to be able to test it before it's available to the public. Do I need to put my box into dev mode as a tester? Or is that only something that's necessary for the actual developer to do?
Right now, if you've got an app that isn't actually in the store that you're working on developing, the only way to get it onto an Xbox is to deploy it to your Xbox from Visual Studio.
So at some point in time, though, you have to imagine that they're going to create something like a beta version in the store like you have for deploying to other devices, right?
Boy, I sure hope so. That would be really nice. I didn't think to ask them that question, but I might see if I can find somebody to ask that question of, because that would be really nice to know. I sure hope so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I bet. All right, so that's actually it for us on the news front this week. Richard, what's been going on with your entertainment center, your media center PC, your Drobo? You've been having a lot of problems lately.
Yeah, you know, I've just been arm wrestling with my entertainment center in general. So lately, I've been having more problems with my media center PC that, yes, I know I need to rebuild. I just haven't had time to do it. But I found that part of the reason for my problems appeared to be that I was actually out of disk space.
Whoops.
But nothing bothered to clearly state that to me in any way that was actionable. There was no messaging. Nothing came up saying, you're almost out of disk space. What was happening is all this other weird stuff was happening. Like, I was getting buffer full errors. I was being told that I was out of space on my iCloud drive.
What?
Like my iCloud drive. Like, why do I care that I'm out of space on my iCloud drive on my PC? I don't. And then I was having all kinds of full memory errors. Like, what is going on? Eventually, I found out that I had, like, I don't know, something ridiculous, like less than a meg of storage space left on my solid state drive.
Wow.
So I ran disk cleanup and got rid of about 12 gig of stuff. It's only a 60 gig drive. So that should keep me going for a while. But I don't know how that happened. That's just crazy.
Yeah, Windows just has a habit of chewing away disk space for some reason.
Yeah, which is why every once in a while, a good flush and fill is a healthy thing. So what I ended up also noticing is that now, and I don't know when this started and I don't know why this is, but anytime that I go back into Media Center after my computer has been sitting for a while, like either it's I've been away from it or it's been off, meaning the monitor's been off, the computer itself doesn't actually go off, I find that my Media Center animations are really jerky, as if they were like 15 frames per second.
Yikes.
Yeah. And I don't understand why that is. But if I exit out of Media Center and restart Media Center, then it's all fine.
And you're getting this even after clearing up your disk space issue?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on there. Later this month, I'm just going to blast the whole thing away.
And this is your like beautiful little Mac Mini based.
It is. Machine. It is. It's a really nice machine.
Yeah.
It's just not behaving well.
That's a really nice machine. Hmm.
Meanwhile, I have been watching some television. I've watched more of Justified. I am up to date on Limitless, which I think has been really good. And I'm so frustrated that there's not a definite renewal on that yet. I don't know if it's going to make it past the finale. So there's, I think, two more episodes of the season, and I hope it gets picked up for next year. Shameless season ended. That was as good and uncomfortable as it always is. And finally, 11/22/63 ended. It did not end the way that I thought it would. That is all that I will say. Well, no, that's not all that I will say. I will also say that having now watched the whole thing, I think I'm in the Brian and Tom camp.
So should I just not even watch this? Especially since I don't have Hulu right now.
If you have not already started it, then I would not. I don't think this is worth 8 hours. See, I looked at it as I had already put 4 hours into it. Then I had already put 6 hours into it. What's another 2 hours? But at this point, if you haven't started it, except for maybe the pilot, then yeah, I wouldn't bother.
Okay.
And that's a shame. I really wanted to like this. I tried hard to like this.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. It doesn't seem like Stephen King books turned into TV shows tend to do all that well.
No, I think that's a very, very accurate statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad. How about you?
So I finally got around to doing something that I think you recommended a while ago. So I continue to struggle with my bandwidth cap issues. And so I decided to give PlayOn a try. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So for our listeners who don't remember what exactly PlayOn does, the main purpose of PlayOn is to be a DLNA server for your media to whatever DLNA renderers you've got around your house. I don't need that. I don't care about that functionality in the least. Not at all. What it also lets you do, though, is record web video if you pay for it. This functionality, I think, is still called Play Later. I know it used to be, but they've done some rebranding stuff.
Yeah, I think now it's called Play On Pro or Play On Extra or something like that.
Right. So you have to pay for it, but to check it out, like, you can pay $5 per month if you want. So I thought, let's just do that. Let's give them $5 and give this a try. And so I did that the other night because Eden, my oldest daughter, has gotten into this Amazon show. It's an Amazon original called Just Add Magic. It's a kid show. And she loves this show, which is cool. Like, I'm glad to see some Amazon original is good kids programming. But Amazon doesn't allow you to control the stream quality. So Amazon videos really, really put a hurtin' on on my bandwidth. So and she's a kid, so she likes to watch things over and over and over again. So this was the perfect case. So I thought, all right, here's what I'll do. I'll grab play on, I'll record all of them. I'm gonna take another hit on the bandwidth there, as you know, to record them, it needs to essentially play them again. You don't actually watch it while it's playing, but it records them. And then I thought, once I have those recordings, I'll throw them on my Plex server and she can watch them on Plex as much as she wants. And it doesn't use any internet bandwidth. So went through, downloaded that whole season, and it worked pretty well. It also ends up compressing the video. So kind of a lot. Each episode, it's a half hour show. Each episode is about 640-ish megabytes. So not super big. They still looked decent. I think they're about 720p resolution. That stuff is adjustable. And I'm not sure how exactly that works with other sources. I haven't tried Netflix yet. I'm going to. But you know, if you're looking for really super high quality recordings, then this probably isn't your best bet, because it only does 720p, at least with Amazon. But it totally works. Now, here's the other interesting thing, because you know, we've talked a lot about like, how is this legal? Well, especially since there's no copy protection on these recordings. That's how I can play it on Plex. One thing that it does that I had no idea that it would do is at the very beginning of the video, it right. says, this was recorded with play on by your email address at this IP address. So yep. Probably not something you want to be throwing out there on BitTorrent land, or you know, wherever you might be illegally giving people videos and stuff. So there's that. But you know, I don't care about that in terms of my daughter watching these videos. That's not really going to be an issue to me. So far, so good. Really enjoying that service. It's working out really well. I'm just running this on my first generation Surface Pro, and it handles it just fine in terms of recording.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're trying this. I am a big fan of this. And if, as a listener, you've tried Play On in the past and you thought, oh yeah, but it's clunky and it, you know, it's hard to use, the new interface that they came out with, I think it was last fall, changes all of that. This is such an easier experience for finding content, for recording content, for monitoring the progress of your recordings. It's more reliable, it's more standard, it's easier to use, and I would highly recommend trying it again if you might have shied away from it before. And like you said, you can try this recording service at a month-to-month kind of rate. And so you don't have to go all in, but if you do go all in, wait for the sales, because multiple times per year, they usually have a sale that's either somewhere between 20, 30, or 40% off their total rate for like a lifetime subscription.
Right. Yeah. I think I've seen it on sale for a lifetime being like $35 or something like that, which, especially compared to $5 a month, that's quite a savings. So
yeah, it's a huge savings. And that gives you everything you would need to record, to get it in high definition. And, you know, generally, it's something that I would recommend trying out. And I love that you have figured out just tying it into your Plex library. I did the same thing. I actually have my Play On folder just monitored by Plex, so that it's a section that I can go to right in Plex. that has anything that I've recorded off of Play On.
Yeah, and you don't even need to deal with like renaming the files or anything like that, because it records them in a pretty standard naming convention and yep. and common folder structure. So yeah, it works out great with something like Plex. And this doesn't just record Amazon and Netflix. It records like, it seems like everything. Like it'll even do
pretty much everything, including HBO.
Yeah, HBO Go, Showtime. It'll do like sci-fi, of course, FX. It'll even do like the sports things, like the NHL Network, the MLB Network, ESPN. All those things are in there because it's all just video feeds. So what I don't see in here, which I think would be really interesting, and I'm not quite sure exactly how they do this, and I think I'd asked you about this before, but Sling TV, like what if you could use this to record the things on Sling TV that Sling TV doesn't let you record? That'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, I don't see them going down that path. Who knows? I never thought that they'd be so bold as to take on HBO either.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember or not, but I had mentioned previously that you can record CBS content, and unlike CBS All Access, which you now have to pay for to watch the content that you could have gotten for free over the air, that you can actually record it through the CBS channel in Play On, because the CBS channel is just coming from CBS.com. It's not coming from the All Access subscription.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. That's really great.
And it's the same content.
Right. So check out Play On, just playon.com. Definitely a cool little service. So there's that, but I'm not watching just Add Magic. I'm watching House of Cards, and I'm almost done. I think I have 2 episodes left this season. I really like it. It's so much better than season 3. It's still been really good. I'm very much looking forward to the last 2 episodes. It's been good. It's like, if you liked season 1 or 2, well, 1 and 2 at all, but hated season 3, season 4 is still worth your time. Go and check out season 4 of House of Cards for sure. Now, that was pretty much it, because I was in San Francisco all week in terms of what I watched. Now, yesterday, I got to play the demo of Final Fantasy 15, which got a release date while I was in San Francisco. It's coming out September 30th. Final Fantasy games are always a huge deal when they come out. They come out so far apart. They take so long to make these games. But they released a demo called Platinum Demo. It's an interesting demo. So the reason that they released this is, it's like, here's how, this is a gameplay demo, and it'll give you an idea of what this game is going to look like. So that's a smart idea, because the gameplay is different than all of the previous Final Fantasy games. And this isn't a big commitment either. This demo only took me a half hour to play through. The thing is, it's not really a great demo of either of those two aspects. Like, in terms of how you play the game, yes, this does show you how you walk around, how you fight, but it's beginning level game fights where, you know, you're just wailing away on weak characters with weak weapons, and it's, you know, that aspect of it is really boring until you get to the boss fight at the end, and that starts to get a lot cooler. Why didn't they have more of that in this demo? And then on the graphics side, the graphics aren't all that impressive. Like, yeah, it shows you the idea of what this game is going to look like, but the graphics themselves, it's not polished. At least I hope this isn't what the polished version is going to look like, and it shouldn't be, because there's 6 months until this game actually comes out. But you know, there are parts where the frame rate just chugs, and it's not the greatest demo. Like, if you're interested in Final Fantasy 15, go and get it. You know, what have you got to lose other than the 4 gig download? But it's really, like, don't get too excited about this. Like, I found some of the videos that you could watch of other gameplay, like, some of the big sites have been able to post other gameplay of, like, the actual game. online, watch those. They're way more interesting. That makes the game look a lot better than what this demo does. And it makes me wonder if they're going to release another demo, because this just isn't great. And then, of course, I'm still playing through The Division. I still haven't hit level 30. It didn't help that I wasn't around at all last week. I didn't get to play that much this weekend. Haven't gotten to play it all this week. Probably won't get to play much this weekend. And we've got new content coming soon that's for level 30 players, and I'm not there yet. So I'm a little bummed that I'm not as far into The Division as I would like to be, but I'm still absolutely loving that game. And it's the only game I've been playing on my Xbox. So got that going. And maybe this weekend, because I've got some weird stuff going on this weekend, might try to squeeze out the last episode or two of Life is Strange, because I was really, really enjoying that game. And I got two episodes left. They're only about 2 hours each. So maybe if I can't use my Xbox this weekend because of a kid's birthday party I got happening this weekend, maybe I can play this on my PC. So we'll see. But that's it for what I've been watching and playing. Cool. And so that's it for our show, basically. So if you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a few different ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. There's the Facebook page at facebook.com/theDMZ. There's the Google Plus community, which I don't even talk about very often. And then we get two stories from it this week. The Windows Media Center community over on Google Plus. Just search for Windows Media Center. You'll find it. You can shoot us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or just use the contact form on the website. And oh yeah, there's that other podcast we've got going on called, what was it called? Home On? Is that it?
Home On. I hear that's Eamon's favorite podcast.
Yeah, maybe I should check that out. What's going on with that show?
So we finally have that episode I've been talking about forever. The interviews from South by Southwest, starting with about 20 minutes of an interview that Mike Wolf and I both posted on our respective shows, followed by interviews with Beta, with Yonomi, and with ConnectSense. And I think it was a pretty good show. I enjoyed the interviews, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback so far on it. So I hope people will enjoy that. Next up, I am trying to get one of the creators of ThingTin, a new home and spaces control application that just came out literally today.
Oh.
The day that we're recording. And this has been in the works for well over a year. And the folks behind it have been in the IoT space for years. And it's something that I've been looking forward to seeing. So I'm glad it's out. We'll probably have something up about it shortly on the site, but I'm hoping to get to talk with them very soon.
Very cool. Looking forward to that. Well, if you like our shows, the best way that you can show us that is by heading on over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or a review. It helps us out a lot, and we really appreciate it. iTunes isn't the only place you can find them, though. You can use Pocket Cast or Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. Richard, I even heard you say that Home On is on Google Play now.
It is. I can't get to it, but it's there.
So maybe Entertainment 2.0 is there now, too. No idea. But yeah, Google doesn't like me, and the feeling's mutual, so I probably wouldn't be able to get to it either. And then come back and listen to us and talk with us as we record this show live, typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. That's not always the case, though, like this week and last week, and I don't know. I have no idea about next week yet. So your best bet is to just follow us on Twitter, because we always tweet about when the show is going to be recording and when you can join us. And there's a chat room along with the audio player so that you can hear us and talk along with us and everybody else who showed up to listen live. And it's a lot of fun. So that's going to do it for episode 364. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 365. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.